Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. I think it's interesting that I'm wearing red and you're wearing green. We look like Christmas.
We've done this before. We have done this before, I want to say.
Probably.
You were wearing your Cousins on Crime green and I was wearing a red something or another.
We complement each other.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yes. We are yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
Yin and yang? Is that what it is?
However you want to say it.
Whatever. How was your day?
My Monday was good.
Was it?
It was just work. Yeah. You've been driving all over the Metroplex.
Oh, man. Yeah. Dallas is not for me.
Mm-mm.
It's a no for me, dog.
I remember when you used to go hang out there.
Yeah.
But that was...
Yeah, not this part of Dallas, though.
Oh, okay.
No, I did go into the office today, and it was nice because I work from home, and so it was nice to see some coworkers and get to talk to people that are operating on my same wavelength, you know? Yeah.
Have some social time.
A little bit of social time. Yeah, it was nice, but mm-hmm. I'm exhausted from driving.
Yeah, that'll do
it. I cannot wait till we can teleport. I just can't wait.
Do you think it'll happen in our lifetime?
When will that be? Oh, man. Well, what do you got for us?
Well, we'll jump right in.
Let's do it.
Okay, so today we're talking about Gregory Joseph Flanagan. Flanagan. He went by Greg, and he was married to his wife, Susie. Now, they had been married when they were younger. Didn't work out. They got a divorce, and then they ended up finding each other again and remarrying.
I love that.
I know. It's like it just has to be.
Yeah, it has to be. Like Ben Stiller and what's her name? Christine Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Is that her name?
I don't know if that...
Yeah. I was so devastated when they broke up, and then when they got back together, I was like, yeah.
All is right.
See? I told you. You shouldn't break up.
Yeah. So that was their kind of deal. They Susie was in her 20s, and when they met, she was a singer in a rock band.
Okay.
She was doing cool stuff.
Susie.
He was smart and successful. He was a patient man who gave unconditional love and generosity to all who were lucky enough to meet him and spend time with him. He was the type of guy that would give you not only the shirt off his back, but the shoes off of his feet.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if I could do that. I mean, I want to be that kind of person, but I'm like, I like my shoes.
Well, you know what? One time Daniel gave me his shoes because I was wearing heels and he walked in sock feet. That was when we were first started dating.
Would he do it now?
Oh, yeah. Aww. He would do it now. But I was like, you're the one.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris gave me the shirt off of his back when we first met. It was raining, so he gave me his shirt to cover my hair that was standing up whenever it was wet. Anyway, we're not going to talk about me. So Greg found solace with his cats, the fish and various birds that would come into his yard. He enjoyed the sunsets, the sunrises, and loved to be covered by a blanket of stars. He just was chill.
Yeah, sounds like it.
When not in that setting, Greg could be found reading a book. He loved traveling with his wife and family. He loved the water. He loved the woods. He was an avid hunter and fisherman. He was young when he started working as a chief engineer on an ocean-going vessel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. doing cool things. He spent months at sea. He then moved on to be a landman in South Texas.
Okay.
A landman, if you don't know, is the person who interacts and negotiates with landowners to acquire leases for the development of oil, gas, minerals, and other energy sources.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I thought you just meant he was just not on sea anymore. He was a landman.
He liked being on
so
land.
It's actually a thing.
It's actually a career. Oh. By the time he was 55, he and his brother Michael had partnered together in an oil land leasing business.
This sounds like money.
Right.
Go on.
Yeah, he was successful. Mm-hmm. Greg stayed at home in Louisiana on the weekends, helping his wife run their bed and breakfast.
Oh.
I just think it's so cool he dabbled in all these things.
Yeah. And on his off time, yeah, he still worked.
Yeah. Every Monday morning, he would drive from Lafayette, Louisiana to Beaumont, Texas, and stayed at the MCM Elegante Hotel.
Oh, excuse me.
He stayed in room 348. He had a system down to a T.
Okay.
He learned how to be organized and travel light. Mm-hmm. Most evenings, he would stay in and relax in the room. On Wednesday, September 15th, 2010, in the early evening, he microwaved a prepackaged popcorn in his room.
All right.
This tripped the electrical circuit and created an electrical outage that had affected the rooms around him.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So you know how when people burn popcorn,
uh-huh,
and it smells up the whole thing?
Yeah.
He just wiped out their electricity. It's always popcorn's fault. Right.
Okay. Now it smells burnt and the lights are out.
Now my walls are burnt.
Yeah. So Greg called the front desk to report the outage, and he admitted, I'm the one that did
it
that.
It was me.
Yeah. I was popping popcorn. This reminds me of a joke. Can I tell you a joke?
Go on.
What did the baby corn say to the mama corn?
What?
Where's popcorn?
He left us, kid.
Okay, sorry, I digress. So Greg sat on the bed. He leaned back on two pillows propped up against the headboard. Like just about every other time, he laid out a clean white hand towel on the bed, which he placed his ashtray, a cigarette pack, mm-hmm, lighter, BlackBerry phone, the TV remote, and a candy bar.
Sounds like a good setup to me.
Yeah. This night, he was eating a Reese's Crispy Crunch bar.
Oh.
Which, that sounds delicious.
Is that a limited edition thing?
I don't know.
That doesn't sound familiar.
We're going to have to see.
Okay.
So he was sipping on some root beer and watching Iron Man 2.
All right.
Greg got an email from his wife, Susie, shortly after 7, in which they had a short conversation back and forth about their taxes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So out of nowhere, as Greg was relaxing there in the bed, he was struck with this shocking pain in his body.
Oh, no.
He got up out of the bed and went towards the door, and then he fell face first on the floor, and he died.
What?
That next morning, Susie hadn't heard from Greg from his usual morning call. I mean, they talk to each other every morning. And so she calls him. There's no answer. She called Greg's office, and they told her that he hadn't even made it into the office yet.
Oh, no. Was he still in the same room? I know he blew the circuit. So
yes.
Did they move him, or he was just still in the same room?
So, yes, the maintenance came at that point when he called the office and said, I blew the breaker. Maintenance came.
Okay.
Fixed
they
it all.
Fixed
yeah.
It. Okay.
His coworkers, realizing that he wasn't in the office yet, they decided to go to the hotel and check on him.
Mm-hmm.
They knock on the door. There's no answer. So they got the hotel manager to open the door, and they found him laying there.
He was right in front of the door.
Yes.
Oh, no.
When police arrived, they found Greg lying lifeless on the floor with a spent cigarette between two fingers of his left hand. They noticed that the crotch of his pajamas were wet, but I don't know if they really made note of it. But Detective Scott Apple arrived on scene about an hour later. He saw no sign of a break-in or struggle, nothing disturbed in the room, no blood or obvious wounds. Greg's wallet was still in the back pocket of his jeans and had a stack of $100 bills.
Oh, nice.
So this wasn't a robbery.
Right.
If it was, those obviously would have been taken. Detective Apple questioned the people in the neighboring rooms. They all told him that they didn't hear anything. He looked through Greg's luggage, but still had no clue as to what could have happened. Maybe it was natural causes. I mean, he was a smoker.
Mm.
Maybe he just had a heart attack.
What a way to go. How iconic, right? With a cigarette in your hand on the floor.
I knew you would love that.
In my casket, please put one of my fake cigarettes in my hand. Just kidding. I want to be cremated. But like, how cool would that be?
I knew
if
you would
I was
love
just
that.
Like this with a fake no. cigarette.
No, I can't do that to you.
I'll tell Daniel.
I mean, if that's your dying wish.
Well, you should hear Daniel's dying wish. He wants to be like unfurled. As he wants to be hung up like a star and like have one particular song playing. Anyway, that's a story for another time.
Yeah. Wow. I have not heard that one. I might have to let that one happen because I need to see it. At the hotel, the police and examiners took pictures and record of the scene. Greg's body was taken to the Jefferson County Medical Examiner for autopsy. Dr. Tommy Brown remarked of a 1-inch abrasion in his left cheek, or on his left cheek, where his face had hit the floor by the door.
Okay.
And a 1/2-inch laceration of his scrotum. Remember, his pants were wet.
Oh.
The scrotum was swollen and discolored, and around the wound was a small amount of edema, like a fluid retention. There was bruising that had spread up through the groin area and across the right hip.
Oh my gosh. That sounds horrible.
I know. So Dr. Brown opened the front of Greg's torso. He noticed a large amount of blood and extensive internal damage.
What?
Yeah, it was shocking.
Strange.
He found small lacerations to his intestines and on the stomach and liver, as well as 2 broken ribs.
What?
And a hole in the right atrium of his heart.
A gunshot.
Well, that's not what it looked like to Dr. Brown.
What, it just looked like a small hole or like a tear?
Yeah, it was just a hole in his heart that he couldn't explain. So he's like, what in the world happened to Greg? He had obviously gone through some severe trauma, and Dr. Brown concluded that the wound in his scrotum and groin area was likely caused by a hard kick.
Oh!
He had also taken a blow to the chest. He would have bled out probably in about 30 seconds is what Dr. Brown...
Was it when he went down? Like when he fell and passed out, he hit his scrotum on something and then his chest on something?
Well,
I don't even have a scrotum and it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to it.
I'm just solving the case in real time.
Yes, I know. Dr. Brown commented that Greg had suffered the kind of severe internal injuries that he was more used to seeing in a crash victim.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah. Or maybe even someone who had something heavy fall on top of them. I don't know.
Oh.
But there was nothing in the room.
Well, right.
that would have fallen on top of him.
And if something like that happened, he would have told his wife, right? Like,
right.
Something fell on me today. And
right. Yeah, but nobody was in the room with him. There was no evidence to even point in what direction.
This is giving Ellen Greenberg like this kind of weird, the door was shut, nobody else was there.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a mystery.
Don't start me on that case. I gotta go.
Yeah, this case had detectives scratching their heads, mm-hmm. and it was a real case of whodunit.
Yeah.
There was no obvious physical evidence. They considered that Greg could have been beaten to death somewhere else, and his body just returned back to the room.
Hmm. And but there was no like blood on the floor?
No blood. No
blood. And there's no natural cause that they can think of that would have caused these injuries.
So the detectives initially thought it was heart attack because mm-hmm. there was nothing to note. But the autopsy it wasn't a heart attack. There was a hole. There were lacerations all through his body. But the weird thing was that there was no blood.
Multiple injuries. Interesting.
So Greg was well liked by his coworkers, by anybody that interacted with him. He never really socialized with anybody at the hotel. He went to his room early in the evening and usually stayed there by himself until morning when he went to work. He had never been down to the hotel bar. He drank alcohol at times, but he wasn't a drunk. Mm-hmm. Getting himself into trouble just wasn't his character.
Yeah.
Detective Apple looked into all kinds of possibilities. And just to talk about a couple, one of the ideas was that it was sex related. The Elegante maintenance man that came to fix the breaker when the popcorn tripped mm-hmm. the breaker, he was questioned. Now, he had a history of being a sex offender.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
How lovely. Thank you for employing a maintenance man that has a key to everybody's door.
Yeah. A little uncomfortable, but there was nothing of concrete evidence to have the detectives move on with mm-hmm. him, and he had an alibi. So. Yeah. So the neighbors staying in the room next to Greg were a group of electricians. There were two in the room next to him, but there were other electricians staying at the hotel.
And they weren't working on the same job. Like, he didn't know them?
No. I mean, probably by coming and going, but mm-hmm. it wasn't a job thing that he worked with. These electricians were staying in town on a contracted job. They lived in Wisconsin. But they were staying at the hotel for about a month or a little longer. But so they were in room 349. Could it have been the group of union electricians staying in the room next door? At night, they gathered in each other's rooms and hung out, drank, mm-hmm. whatever. I mean, did one of them see something going on the night before? Anyway.
Yeah.
Perhaps they were drunk and annoyed and beat him up for the lights going out or the burnt popcorn smell. I don't know. That's an avenue that they had to check out. Some of the electricians had been questioned on the day the body was found, but none of them said that they had any interaction with Greg. They were questioned a second time 9 days after Greg's death. Detective Apple was wearing a hidden video camera.
Oh.
The men were friendly, just acted as shocked as anybody mm-hmm. else. One of the electricians in room 349, Lance Mueller, he asked, "What happened to the guy anyway?" And Detective Apple says, "I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out. It's almost like something fell on him or something." And Lance is like, had this shocked look on his face. Something fell on him? The only tip that Lance and his roommate, Tim Steinmetz, had was that they heard a man in the next room coughing when they returned back from the bar that night.
Hmm. Like Greg's side?
Yes. Okay. In Greg's room, they heard, which Greg was a smoker. He did have a cough, but that was the only thing that they could note.
Mm-hmm.
The electricians handed Detective Apple their information and cell phone numbers. They would have been in town a few more months, so they would be there if detectives needed anything from them. Susie was shortly thought of as a possibility, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you got to.
Right. So maybe she had her husband killed. Maybe Michael, Greg's brother, his business partner. But there was nothing to support those theories.
Right.
Detectives were at a loss. Greg's family put up $50,000 reward. Michael hired a private detective, Ken Brennan, a former FBI agent.
Oh.
Susie talked to Ken and explained everything that she knew of the case, and he agreed to take a look at the files once she sent them to him.
Were they investigating this as a homicide, or they were investigating it as like a suspicious death?
So did they say? I'm so sorry, I did not say that earlier. After the autopsy report, yes, Dr. Brown did note it as a homicide.
Okay, because I was wondering if he didn't, why they were investigating so hard.
Okay,
because it seems like they were putting a lot of resources into figuring out what happened.
Yes.
And, you know, we often see police departments go, it's
absolutely
suspicious, but, you know.
Yeah, we can just deem it as a natural causes. But no, the medical examiner knew something. I mean, this was not normal.
Right.
This was not natural. So, yes, it was homicide.
How perplexing.
Right. The mystery of Greg's case appealed to Ken, the private investigator, because there were so many avenues to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Ken told Detective Apple that he wanted to work on the case as a team. Like, I'm not here to take over. Let's do this together.
See, and I think that's how we'll be in our PI business.
That's right.
We'll liaise with the police.
So Ken talked to Susie first. He dug into all aspects of their relationship and who Greg was.
Mm-hmm.
He felt confident that he could clear her as she had no clear motive. Ken asked her, was there anything about the crime scene that didn't just seem right to you? Like what seemed off? Susie told him that she was surprised that the room was so warm.
Oh.
When Greg's coworkers walked in, it was
like the heat was on.
It was hot in his room, and Greg liked a cold room, uh-huh. especially when he was going to bed.
Yeah. So it was hot enough for them to note that when
Correct.
They walked in.
Right. And
must have been pretty warm.
Yeah. I mean, this is in South Texas, mm-hmm. and it's just hot in Texas. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, the room was hot, and that just wasn't normal for Greg. Then Ken went to Beaumont to meet. After talking to Susie, he went to Beaumont and met with Detective Apple. They went to the hotel room, let him look around. They reviewed crime scene photos and the autopsy results, everything that had been done on the case. After taking it all in, Ken said, I think I know how this guy died.
What?
I think I know. So Detective Apple's like, okay, come on. I've been doing this.
Come on, Mr. XFBI. Tell me.
Yeah, he's like, I've been doing this for months now. Are you going to come? No, I don't know if he said that. But Ken said, hear me out. I'll tell you what I think. But first, I got to call the guy's wife. So he calls Susie and he asks, was your husband left-handed or right-handed? And she says he was right-handed. And Ken asks, when he smoked, did he smoke with his cigarette in his left hand or his right hand? She said, definitely his right hand.
Mm-hmm.
He says, are you sure? She says, yeah, I'm positive. Well, Ken explains to Detective Apple, knowing that the room was warm, the air conditioner was shut down when everything else went off. when the breaker was tripped. Uh-huh. And Greg just forgot to turn on the AC. Like, it took a minute for it to warm up in the room. Yeah. So he didn't realize. So that kind of gives an idea of
when
and what time. Because I think it was about 8:30 p.m. that the maintenance man came into the room.
Okay.
Greg probably went back to watching the movie, forgot about the AC. So there was that thought that Greg was beaten somewhere else and had then been returned to the room. But one thing that they could not extinguish, that the idea that the cigarette was in his hand, like...
In his left hand.
He's not going to hold a cigarette while he's being beat up and then they're going to return him to the room.
And also, if he fell to the floor naturally, wouldn't it have fallen out of his hand?
Right.
But it wouldn't have been in his left hand.
Okay, so... if Greg was right-handed, why was the cigarette in his left hand? That's the question. As Ken pieced it together, examining the state of the room, Greg had gotten up from the bed and headed towards the door, shifting the cigarette from his right hand to the left hand so that he could grab the door handle.
So he's opening it for someone.
Was he? Why was he going towards the door?
Okay.
Ken was sure that Greg had been just minding his own business in his hotel room, and he was sure that the electricians had something to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, because the walls are paper thin.
Yeah.
How would you not hear even him collapsing?
I mean, they heard him coughing.
Yeah. If you heard him coughing, you would hear him fall to the floor.
You would think. But they did have that story that they were at the bar earlier that night.
Yeah.
So maybe the union guys were drunk and confronted Greg in the doorway of his room, exchanged words, and kicked him to death right there.
Mm.
So Ken then went to talk to Dr. Brown. He wanted to know more about the injuries. Could the laceration of the scrotum have been caused by a hard kick, especially if the attacker was wearing steel-toed boots, much like a construction worker would wear.
Mm-hmm.
As Ken watched the hotel surveillance video, he saw Greg coming in from work that evening. They showed several of the electricians making trips to their vehicles in the parking lot, but there was nothing obviously suspicious. They were just going back and forth. Ken knew that he had to keep digging in this hole.
Yeah.
Eventually, he was gonna hit something in there. The electricians, the coworkers were all questioned. The coworkers had heard about Greg's death, but they hadn't heard anything other than like surface level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
like they don't know how he died.
Right. They go to work and they're like, "Man, this guy next door in our hotel room died last night." But that's all they could tell.
Yeah, that's terrible.
There was a bit of confusion when one of the crew foremen, a man named Aaron, said that he had heard something about a gun going off in the boarding house. I'm assuming that means the hotel. I don't know. When they left that interview, Ken suggested that they go back to the hotel. Detective Apple's like, "Well, what are we going to possibly find 8 months later?" But so he entertained him. Ken wanted to rule out all the possibilities of a shooting. He wanted to look for a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Would it still be there all this time later? They reinspected that room high and low, front to back, top to bottom, on hands and knees, over and under, side to side.
From the window to the wall.
I almost put that in here. Yes, but they found nothing. Ken just couldn't stop. He's like, there's got to be something in here.
Yeah.
He saw an indention in the wall alongside the closed door that led to the adjoining room. So like if you opened the door and the door handle would hit the wall.
Right.
He's like, okay, well, let me open this door and see if it matches, that. But the indention was a little too far over to the right for it to be the door handle.
Huh.
So he's like, okay. Now this indention was obviously a repair job. It had been patched up.
Uh-huh.
They examined the other side of the wall in room 349. What they found was a small hole in the wall that had been patched with a faintly pink filler that was determined to be dried toothpaste.
What?
Yeah. So the patched holes lined up perfectly. It was clear to them that a bullet had gone through the wall.
Whoa.
Beaumont's crime scene investigators carefully excavated both holes. I guess they took the sheetrock out of the wall. But the trajectory pointed straight up to the bed where Greg had been sitting, relaxing.
It went up through his man business.
It hit him. The bullet went through the wall, hit him in the scrotum, and up to his heart.
Oh, my God. And it was so tiny, they didn't find the bullet in his body?
No, they did not
find the bullet. Did they do an x-ray?
I don't know, but by this time, I think it was like 8 or 9 months later that they came to this realization.
Yeah.
Greg was cremated.
No!
Yes. What fascinates me or makes me curious is when you cremate somebody,
the metal in
their body. So where did the bullet go? I mean, there was never a bullet found.
So I follow Lauren the Mortician on Instagram. She's amazing. I'm so fascinated by all the stuff she talks about.
Yeah.
But she has talked about the metal that's in people's bodies, mm-hmm. like when they're cremated and the metal is like sifted through, and it goes into a pile. So maybe they just put it in the pile. Like all the bones and ash went over here and all the metal went over here and they didn't make sense of it. Like maybe they didn't know.
Yeah, that's very possible.
They could go back like they could have maybe could at have, that point and looked through their metal because they do keep a big box of it.
Right.
Like exactly. For recycling and stuff.
And I don't know if they did or maybe they didn't even think about that at that point. They did talk about the possibility of being able to exhume him, but no, they couldn't because he was
But why cremated. Didn't they do an x-ray? That should be the first thing done before an autopsy. Like, I just...
I don't know.
Should be the first thing they do. He knew that the ribs were broken. Was he observing that?
I don't know. He opened the torso.
Yeah, he opened him up, so he probably saw the ribs were broken. What a tiny bullet.
Yeah, it was a small caliber.
Jeez.
Detectives had tracked down Tim Steinmetz after this in Wisconsin to question him again. It started as a friendly interaction and then into the conversation. Tim was asked, so you heard the guy next door died at this hotel room. He's like, yeah. And so Tim says, we did hear that, but we really didn't know for sure what was going on. We had no idea. We didn't hear any commotion next door, no banging, no nothing. That's why it's just kind of weird. Tim asked, you guys flew all the way here just to ask me this again? Ken asked him to read and sign the written statement that he had just given. You know, there was more to the conversation, mm-hmm. but Ken's like, okay, if you could just sign this statement. And so once the statement was signed, Tim stood up and asked, all right, is that it? And Ken said, well, hang on a second. why don't you tell us what really happened?
Yeah. I flew all the way out here to look you in the eye, actually.
He said, because we know exactly what happened in that room. And now you're going to go to jail with Lance. And Tim's like, why am I going to go to jail with Lance?
Oh, man.
So Ken said, you just made a false police report for one. That's why. And Detective Apple said, Tim, we know what happened. We know everything that happened down there. And I realize you're trying to be noble and protect a friend, but you're about to get your whole family in a bind and it's not worth it. So Tim He let his guard down and he revealed what happened.
Yikes.
So a coworker, Trent Pisano, was in the room with them. They were talking, hanging out, and he gave detectives the same story as Tim's giving now.
Uh-huh, because they colluded.
Correct.
They were like, we're taking this to our grave. Let's spit on it.
And well, and that was the plan.
Handshake.
That was the plan, but yeah. Now they're both telling the truth.
Wow. I mean, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You can't. They probably lost sleep over this.
Right?
I mean.
I would.
Yeah.
I mean, but I wouldn't be going months without.
Exactly.
So the story goes they had been drinking and Lance asked Trent to go get a bottle of whiskey and his 9mm pistol from the car. Lance took the handgun and started playing with it as he's drunk.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Right?
We've just got done drinking.
Yeah.
Go get my gun out of the car.
So he pointed the gun at Tim, and then he pointed it in Trent's direction at the foot of the bed, and the gun went off. Trent thought for a second, he's like, oh my gosh, was I hit? Did he get me? But then Trent turned around and saw the hole in the wall behind him. Lance freaked out. He put the gun up and he went and took it to his car. When Lance got back to the room, Trent was like, I'm out of here. He was gone. He went back to his room. Lance and Tim went downstairs to the bar. They're like, oh.
Did they hear Greg get up and go, oh,
They did not. The only thing they said they heard from that room was him coughing.
So they were probably just scrambling and they probably could have heard him, but they were
right
flustering.
Right. They went to the bar. They said they actually heard him coughing when they got back from the
bar.
That's
what I thought you said.
At midnight.
Uh-huh.
So Tim said they weren't sure that there was anyone staying in the room next door at that time. But then they heard him coughing at midnight. So he admitted that they were disturbed when they saw that the man was being wheeled out on the gurney the next day. Disturbed.
That's an understatement.
The detectives asked him to call Lance and let him record the conversation as they're sitting right there. And Tim agreed. Tim says, hey, Lance, what's up? Lance says, not much, just sitting around. And Tim said,
he's just sitting around.
Just living life. And Tim says, well, I just got back from down there. I told them the whole story. So I guess he had already told Lance, hey, going to talk.
Yeah.
He said, I told him the whole story. You know what had happened, that we were sitting there and, you know. And Lance says, what's that? And Tim said, you know, the story where we're sticking to. So we got home late that night and, you know, and the guy coughed and whatever. And Lance is like, right. Tim hem-haws around.
Just say it, Tim.
And he's like, I was going to leave there then because your lawyer said it would be okay, right? You know? And when I left, they said, okay, you know, tell us the truth. So, you know, I told the truth, what really happened. Lance got quiet and he asked about the gun going off. Tim says, yep. And Lance says, what did they say? And Tim said, well, that I would be in trouble, you know, if I didn't tell them. Lance was quiet again and he asked, so what did they say? Tim said, not much. I don't know if they're going to try to get a hold of you or Trent or what they're going to do. Lance asked, what did they mean by tell the truth? Did they say anything about the gun prior to? So he knows that they got something. Tim said, no, they just said they knew exactly what happened, told me to stop lying. And then I told them exactly how everything went down and what really happened. So Tim advised Lance that he probably needed to go ahead and
lawyer up.
Well, go in and talk to them.
Yeah,
and,
or straighten it out.
Yeah. He said, you should probably make some kind of effort, you know.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
And he said, he confirmed with Lance, they're saying the guy died from a gunshot. And Lance is like, are you kidding me, Tim? And he's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? And Tim's like, I'm serious as a heart attack, because this whole time
they
really thought that the guy died from either natural causes or something heavy falling on him, because that's what the detectives told him. And it was all over the news.
So they didn't see the bullet hole in their wall?
Who, Tim and Lance? Yeah.
They did?
They knew it was there. They put it there. They saw it there. And so, I think they're the ones that patched it up. I don't know.
Well, obviously they patched it. That's what I'm saying. Like, what did they think?
Lance convinced himself.
Yeah.
That there was nobody in the room at the time of the gunshot, and that he wasn't the reason.
That the guy died.
Yeah.
Oh,
He could not believe it. And he had already consulted his lawyer. His lawyer had already obtained the autopsy report and assured him that the man had not died from a gunshot.
Good Lord.
So he was convinced that it wasn't him. So now he's like, wait, it was a gunshot? Lance eventually called Ken while he was intoxicated and said he wanted to make a statement. Well, Ken was like, dude, you're drunk. I suggest you call your attorney.
I would have to be drunk to make a statement.
Oh, man. So on October 29th of 2012, Lance Mueller entered a no contest plea to manslaughter. The judge gave a speech about his irresponsible behavior to play with a gun and then sentenced him with 10 years, half of what the law allowed. In court, Lance gave an apology to the family. Susie had a chance to speak to Lance directly. She said, I've waited over 2 years to look you in the face, eye to eye, and simply have the chance to speak directly to you. You would have never come forward with the truth. You murdered him. No, you didn't intentionally seek him out to murder him, but you murdered him. With every lie you told, with every intentional selfish deception, with every cover-up, over and over again, you saw his body taken out of the room in a body bag the next day. You knew you killed him. He meant nothing to you.
Oh, that's powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, a stupid, stupid mistake. I mean, a dumb decision.
That's the thing, though, is, you know, our parents told us the decisions you make.
Yes. There are consequences.
There are consequences to those decisions. And the consequence may be that you lose your phone for a week.
Right.
Or the consequence may be that you accidentally kill somebody.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you don't get to choose the outcome.
No. At that point, no.
Good
and
Lord.
That's, I tell my nieces and nephews all the time, like, you have to think about the cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were drunk. They were not thinking clearly.
But how reckless.
Oh, yeah.
To say, go outside and get my gun.
Right. And to be the coworker to be like, okay, let me go
but
get your gun.
But what purpose? Yeah, exactly. What did he think? What purpose did he think going to get the gun would serve in the hotel room?
Maybe he thought he just wanted it for protection or something later in the evening if something. I don't know. But just dumb decisions. Think about what you're doing. The thing that gets me, it would have been so easy for the medical examiner to rule the manner of death as natural due to a heart attack. Like, he could have just been like, all right, on to the next. But I mean, in Beaumont, there was, like, I think I read 10 murders a year. It's like very small population. So he took his job seriously and he had the time. It wasn't like he had a bunch of murders to investigate or but he didn't. They could have gone with the theory that something fell on him. I mean, even though there was no evidence to that.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God that medical examiner ruled it a homicide, therefore leaving it open for investigation. And these detectives, they did not stop.
Man.
Like, to look at every detail of the wall to notice something's not right there. I mean,
yeah,
you have to have the eye. I mean, that's so impressive to me.
So his clothes didn't have a hole in them? It went up his pant leg?
That I don't know.
I'm thinking, you know, if the crotch was wet,
you would think there was a hole in his clothes.
They would have found a hole in the clothes, but no, if he was laying down, it likely went up the pant leg.
Yeah.
But then wouldn't there, maybe he was going commando. I don't know. I was going to say maybe even then there would have been a hole in his underwear or whatever, but.
I don't know. Yeah, that's. Or maybe they just cut his clothes off before investigating his clothes. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, they didn't do an x-ray, so.
And if they did, the bullet wasn't seen on it. I don't know if they did or didn't. That's not mentioned. But it doesn't seem like it, because you would think that they would find a bullet.
Yeah.
If the bullet was not in his body. I mean, there was no exit wound. They didn't mention any exit wound. So.
He had an abrasion on his cheek.
Because he fell to the floor.
He fell to the floor. So it's not like it exited through his cheek.
Yeah, no exit wound.
Okay. Yeah, so it was in there.
What a mystery, right? And they solved it with, I think, in 9 months or something like that.
I love that.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder why some of these cases get sidelined and put on the back burner. Yeah. When because they have so much more evidence than this case.
Yeah, right.
But it's that drive. It's that I'm not going to stop until I find the answer.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. I mean, I'm so sad that he was just out of town on business and
living his life. Chilling.
Dunzo.
Yeah.
For nothing.
No. Makes no sense. No sense.
All because some idiots next door were immature.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah, that's all I got for you.
Well, thank you for telling his story. I mean, I'm sure in a lot of ways this is chalked up to an accident, you know, and it essentially is, but it's reckless.
Yeah.
I mean, what was his charge? Was it reckless homicide or he got second?
Manslaughter.
Manslaughter? Mm-hmm. Okay. So in different states, it's called different things, but it's just so reckless,
right,
to be in possession of a firearm when you have been drinking.
Yeah.
It's reckless to put a firearm in someone's hands that you know has been drinking.
Exactly.
It's just all of it. And every single one of them, I feel like, should have had some kind of charge of lying, because they did lie.
Absolutely.
They said they didn't hear anything. There was nothing of note. There was a gunshot.
Mm-hmm.
So tell the truth.
It was easier to convince themselves that it could not have been.
Right. Oh my gosh.
But kudos to these detectives. Tough. I'm impressed.
I'm impressed too. Well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Okay, let's do it.
Bye guys.
Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs, or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.